Welcome to the Motorcycle Vagabond Show. Today we have with us Gina. Is it Gina or Gina Marie? Do you have a preference?
I do not, and some people call me GM.
Oh, that works too. I'm always going to think General Motors when I hear GM.
True, but I work with the software industry, and those programmers love acronyms, so the shorter the better.
You know, I think we spend so much time making it shorter, we spend more time. We waste the time making it shorter.
Yep, exactly.
So what kind of bike do you ride, Gina?
So I ride several different types of bikes. I ride a Honda CB500X adventure touring bike. And then I also ride a Yamaha TW200, a small little putt-putt bike that is like a billy goat that can go anywhere and everywhere.
So the Honda CB500X is your big bike?
Yes, it is.
What year is it?
It's a 2014.
Ah, I had a 13.
Nice.
Those are really good bikes. Yeah, those. It was a really great bike. I wish I still had it. It got ran over, so.
Oh, no. Yeah, I really love that bike. And that's actually my second big bike. So I originally got the Honda CTX 500, and I just didn't like it. It wasn't comfortable, and luckily, my nephew wanted it, and he bought it from me, and then I found this bike, and it's just a better fit. So sometimes you have to try out a couple bikes to find the right one for you.
Oh, I agree, and I actually wrote an article about how to pick out your first motorcycle or your next motorcycle, and the number one thing I tell people is don't ask the internet. Just go sit on them. Go take them for test rides. You know, your body's different.
Yes, I agree 100%, and even I test rode that first one, and I thought it was comfortable. I thought it was the perfect bike, but I don't know. After like 3 months worth of riding it, I just hated it. It was, I guess, because my feet were forward, and I'm so used to riding dirt. I want to be able to stand up at any point of time to balance myself or quickly readjust myself, and that the Honda CTX just wouldn't allow me to do it. So I admitted it and said it wasn't for me, and I just went shopping for another one. And I think a lot of people are afraid to say, nope, this is not me, and they think they made a big investment into that bike that they're willing not to switch and just kind of give up riding.
Oh, yeah, I see that happen a lot. They have their heart set on this is going to be their first and only bike. It's the perfect bike for them. No other bike exists. And then it's not. And instead of going out and finding the one that, you know, keep looking for your dream bike, they just give up.
Exactly. And then, like you said earlier, not rely on the internet. I see a lot of people say, oh, no, you must have, you know, this brand or that brand, and I'm not going to bash any brand because, you know, each is to own. But it doesn't have to be the main popular brand or the most expensive brand to be the perfect bike for traveling on the road. You may not remember this, but you and I met back in 2015, so quite a while ago, and I was riding that Yamaha TW200 all over the United States, 15,000 miles, just on the back road. So I didn't need a big 1200 to do the trip. That little 200 got me everywhere I wanted, allowed me to see everything I wanted to see, and just had fun on that bike. And it was actually everywhere I stopped at a gas station, it was the star attraction, and everybody had to know what kind of bike that was. And so it was an eye catcher for sure.
We met at the Horizons Unlimited meeting in Mariposa, California, didn't we?
Yep, we sure did. Your presentation was right before my presentation, and that's how we got to meet.
Ah. That was a pretty fun event. I liked the people that showed up.
Yes, it was an awesome event, and that was actually my first event I ever went to, and got the bug on motorcycle travel, and been traveling ever since, and now I present on other places and stuff like that, but I'm not in California anymore, so I don't get to go to the Mariposa one anymore, so we all kind of went different ways.
Yeah, I mean, that happens, though. We get around.
Mm-hmm.
So, I run a DR350. Some people know this, some people don't. It's a 1991 single-cylinder kickstart carbureted air-cooled motorcycle. And mine's got 57,000 miles on it. And I'm sure you and I get the same remarks or questions all of the time about how do you travel in that? Isn't it uncomfortable? I can't believe it hasn't broken down. And, well, yeah, it has broken down, but every bike breaks down.
Yep.
So how do you deal with the negative that people throw at you for riding a small bike and actually enjoying it?
I'm sorry for dropping the phone, but you know, that's a good point. You know, I've always had people tell me, oh no, you need a newer model, because my TW200 was a 1990 model and had 30,000 miles on it, and I put another 15,000 miles on top of that. And they're like, oh, you need a water cool bike, so you don't have to worry about that or this or that. And I wanted the TW and the carburetor is I can fix it myself. I can fix that engine. So if it did break down, I know what to do. I can do it on the side of the road. I can do the change myself. And it was smaller and easier for me to manage that bike, that was much lighter than those big 1200. And I didn't have to rely on finding a dealership to get me the replacement part. Yamaha is pretty much everywhere you go.
Well, there's a lot of benefits. I say the same thing. Cheap, affordable, easy to fix. But people who live on a schedule can't seem to grasp the concept that when you have the time, the small bike will get you to the same places. It just takes you longer. But that gives you, I think, a lot more chance for adventure along the way.
Exactly. And, you know, what's bad, today in age, we are so taught that everything is instantaneous. I mean, we have to blame the internet for it, unfortunately. But we want everything instantaneous, and we want it on our fingertips. We don't know how to slow down. And actually, I'm going to date that even back. The internet didn't cause that. The interstate, the invention of the interstate caused that, because we can get point A to point B without seeing anything in between that. And we've lost that opportunity to slow down and to see the world. There's so much in between. And so everybody think, okay, I got to do this. I got to, you know, have this kind of get a college education. I have to have, you know, a family with a house with a white picket fence and 2.5 kids and have this much in my nest egg so I can retire. And you know what reality is? Life is too short. And it may be all gone before you even notice. And I can share that with a personal experience. And that's how you and I met. And I was giving a presentation. And it's the reason why I took my trip. You know, my husband was diagnosed with cancer. And 3 weeks later, he passed away at the age of 58. And one of his wish when he was in the hospice said, you know what, sell the house, do the trip now. Life is too short. You know, we try to get to that perfect point where we think we can survive or function without all of that stuff. You may never get the opportunity to live life and to see life, the world out there. And so, we're trying to save money for this big old bike, the 1200 or whatever bike, and we can do with a whole lot less, like you and I do. We ride minimally on a small bike, and people are like, how do you do it on a 200? It was easy. Luckily I knew somebody who built a custom rack for that bike, and I started off with soft bags, with the heat, and it was vinyls, unfortunately, and with the heat, it just started expanding, so I went with the hard pack, and that just worked out better, and I stayed away from the freeway. I did the back road. It took me longer. People always ask, why do you only do 150 miles a day? And I'm like, well, because I stop a lot. I talk to people. I do a lot of shiny moments. I'm a history buff. So if I see something historical, I did a squirrel moment and did a 90-degree turn and check out that historical site before I get into my destination. I didn't plan it out. I mean, I kind of knew which direction I wanted to go, but it may change. And I had a plan A, B, C, and D for that day, because anything can happen. Bike breakdown, people you meet, places you want to go that you didn't know existed, you know, just all that kind of stuff. And there's so much more out there instead of trying to race the clock and get to the final destination.
Oh, definitely. I was in the car with AJ. We just took a car trip up to Broadway to see Phantom of the Opera. And it's funny how you say, you know, people don't appreciate the journey to a place. When we talked about the death of the road trip, and when he was a kid, so he was born in the 70s and raised in the 80s, you know, the 80s being the primary years that he remembers. And his parents would, you know, get their 2 weeks off and they go to their trip, but their trip would be equal amounts of the travel there, time spent at the destination and travels back. And his parents would plan things along the way because there's the roadside attractions and museums. And, you know, you go from one point to another point and there's still much to do along the way. Whereas these days, like you said, the interstate, people just hop on them and they go straight to their destination to spend as much time as they can there. And then they hop straight back and rush back to work and not appreciate that journey along the way where you could do so much more. You may even find something in between those two things that the next time that will be your destination.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, I always keep a notepad with me when I'm on my bike because, you know, I may not be able or I'm stopping too many times that I just need to balance it out. But I make a note. This is something I want to go back to check it out and do it a different way to get to that same place.
Yeah, I think that's one of the best things about a small bike is that it's easy to take small roads because it keeps you at the 55, 60 where you want to be. You're slow enough that it's easy to stop and get turned around. And I'm like you, if I see a historical marker or a museum or anything like that, I'm going to go back and read it. And then getting to take lots of pictures and just thoroughly enjoy the experience and not, like, you know, being on the road for months on end, if all you do is push through to the next destination, you're missing the majority of your travels.
Exactly.
So when you do your small bike trip, where all did you go?
Where did I all went? So, like I said, I was a history buff. And so when I did my trip or looking for a trip to take, but I look for the old U.S. route. You know, these were the roads that were around before the interstate came about. You know, everybody thinks Route 66 is the oldest one and it's the most famous one. But you know that Route 6, U.S. Route 6, is the oldest continuous road in America. And it actually goes all the way from Bishop, California to Providence, Rhode Island. And so I look for those things, the Stagecoach route, the postal route. So the old postal route out there still. And then there was also another app called roadsideamerica.com. You can get it as an app only if you have an Apple phone, iPhone, or you can just use the website and you can pick a map, pick a town, and it will show you all the quirky roadside attractions that are out there. And what to fun up that app was, you know, back in the 60s, before the interstate, businesses would develop these little, you know, something to catch your eye to make you go there. The gas station was notorious for that. You know, the Unocal man, the Uni Royal gal, and the totem head that one of the artists developed, and there's one in every state. And just picking a theme and a mission and go. Sometime I just look at a map and put my finger on it and say, well, I'm going to ride there. Or I want to find something different to eat. And I will do a 4-hour ride just to try a meal and try a restaurant just so I can be on my bike.
I mean, I think we've all seen that meme. Give a biker a motorcycle and they'll ride 300 miles to eat fish and chips. Or however that goes. I think you've seen it. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, I've seen those. And, you know, I would meet up friends. We'll say, hey, let's meet somewhere halfway. They're in, you know, I'm in Alabama, so they're in the South Alabama, and we'll pick somewhere in the middle just to have lunch together. And that means it's a 4-hour ride just to get there. I know there's groups out there, they do that, where they pick a different destination, and they all ride to there to eat lunch and meet up with these fellow riders and go back home to where they started from. So there's groups out there that does that.
Oh, definitely. So on top of Roadside America, There's also another one called Atlas Obscura, and they're worldwide.
Yep.
So it's another great one where you can find stuff. I'm actually looking at the map right now, and they have pins down in Antarctica, like the Antarctic Sculpture Garden. So I guess if you ever find yourself there, this map will show you some cool places to check out while you're in an area.
And did you know they host events? So I've done some of those, and they will do tours of certain things. My husband and I one time did a tour of a pinball museum, and they let you play the machine for an hour. And it was just cool just to learn about the history of the pinball machine and get to play the old machine that I grew up with, because, you know, I'm probably older than all of you guys here. But that was our pastime, to play those pinball machines at the arcades and stuff. But so that's a great resource for cool and interesting stuff to find.
Oh, I agree. So how else do you find your routes? Like, usually when I'm looking for a route when I'm on my 350, and because I'm capable of dirt and gravel and paved, you know, it doesn't bother me if it changes. I usually, like, zoom in on Google. I go from the yellow roads to the big white roads to the tiny little white roads you have to go in real close on. And I start using those, and I found some really cool stuff just going along the way.
I'll have to try that one. I haven't done that. You know, what I do is I hate the term, because that's the death of GPS. As long as you're smart about it, you know what you're doing. But on my GPS, I say avoid highway. And, you know, it has taken me to some places where I think I hear the banjo playing, but I have seen cool, amazing stuff, and it may take me twice as long to get there, but it's just a beautiful scenery. That's the way I go about it. And sometimes, like you, I just look at a map and kind of, you know, figure out which way. So I may have to put 4 or 5 destinations on my map, so I make sure I go that way, because the GPS always tried to make you go the fastest way, but most of the time, I just hit avoid highway on my GPS.
So I did when I first started on the road, I was on the Victory Cross Country, and I was taking the quickest route to my destination that I was going to. I had a little list of things people had recommended. And then I got the Honda CB500X, and I started turning off highways. And with a 350, that's where I started picking my own route. So I'll drop pins to keep it on the little roads I want. And so I have, like, these, you can actually save your route by, you know, share a route. You get a link. So I'll figure out my route. It'll have, you know, as many pins as I can possibly do on one route going down the smallest roads. And that's how I've actually gotten to where I do with the 350.
Oh, that's cool. I like that tip.
You said about the GPS. I was going to make a remark about that, too. A lot of people complain. Well, a lot of people complain, especially the older generation. They're like, oh, you kids and your technology and your phones and stuff. The phone is only as much of a hindrance as you let it be in your travels. Mine is a tool. Mm-hmm. It lets me know weather. It lets me take pictures. I can take notes. I can save pins on my map to go back to, or to remind myself of where I, you know, camped. It gives me a chance to find free camping, since I, you know, I'm all about that. And it's a research tool. If you sit there and you play on it all day and you get on Facebook or, you know, you start scrolling, that's your own choice to waste your time with that device. It can just be a tool if you make sure to keep it in that category, you know?
Yeah. And the reason I say death of GPS, so I used to be part of the Sheriff's Search and Rescue team, and we always have that saying, the death of GPS, because people rely on the GPS where, you know, the road may be not good for a car travel, or, you know, GPS is like any software. There's always at least 20% of defect in there. So, and people just don't use their head when they're using the GPS, and they think it's the Bible or the gospel of the way you have to go. And when it's something that's sketchy and it doesn't look right to you, trust your gut instinct and turn around and find another way. And that's why we joke about that GPS. And I'm like you. You know, I've been first to rescue. I know how to read a map. I know how to navigate. And even where I'm driving, I have my GPS on and running, because I live in a rural area and there's only so many exits. And if there's a major accident, I'm going to be stuck sitting on that road for hours, where the GPS will reroute me saying, hey, there's a major slowdown, you can go to a different route. That's why I keep my TBS. But yeah, I'm still smart about it. You know, if that road doesn't look like my bike can handle it or my car can handle it, I'm not going to take it. I'm going to turn around and ride my own ride and be safe about it. I think that's what happens when people make bad choices and rely on the GPS, especially like the older generation and stuff. They just got to step back and think of what they're doing.
Right. Unfortunately, I bet some of these people were, the GPS will say turn left now, and they turn left right off of a cliff without even hooking.
Exactly.
It is the tool. It is not the entirety of the decision-making process. That's what you are there for.
Mm-hmm.
So where have been some of your favorite quirky roadside stops?
Ooh, quirky roadside stops. Oh, man, there's so many. You know, and even on my travel, people always ask, what's your favorite place you ever been to? And I always said, it's not really the favorite place that I've been to. It's the people that I meet along the way. I'll have to share this story. So on my journey, I was going to check out Mount St. Helens, because I remember as a kid watching on the news when the Mount St. Helens exploded. And so it's like ingrained in my brain, and I was like, I got to go see it. And I was having a bad day to begin with that day, and I remember that because I forgot to put my camera in the bag. It fell off. I had to backtrack and find my camera, and I found it and continue on my way through my journey. I was just tired, cranky, and I get to Mount St. Helens, and I don't know if you've ever been there yet. It's not like right in front of you. It's still quite a way. So you're in the parking lot, and you don't have a really good view of Mount St. Helens. You probably could if you do the hike, and if I'd known and done my homework that it would be a hike, but it was towards the end of the day. I couldn't get any closer. It wasn't a good view, but I'm sitting there taking a break, getting my drink, eating my snack, and you can see this little, I'd say he was probably 6 or 7 years old, this red, bright red carrot top head, and he's shy. He's looking at my bike, kind of, you know, checking it out, but just won't say anything. And his mom and dad were with him, and he had one of those John Deere tractor ride-along thing. They took it out of the bed of their truck, put it on the parking lot. He got on it and rode up right next to my bike and just started asking me a million questions about my bike and what did I name it, why did I name it that way, and how fast I go, and all this cool stuff. And we're just chatting away. And I finally said, hey, do you want to race? And his eyes lit up. And so what I did is just put my bike in neutral, and I used my feet to pedal the bike, and we ran around the entire parking lot. And I let him win. So I said, oh, we got to have a victory lap. You won. So we had another lap. And it was all said and done. And his parents picked him up, put him in the truck, and I went to use the facility before I hit the road again. And I came back out, and we had a crowd. You know, people lined up around that parking lot, taking pictures, cheering us on. And, you know, when I came out of the facility, everybody pretty much was gone, and it was just my little bike there. But it was weird. As I was walking to my bike, there was stuff on it. But I couldn't tell what was on it. It was just too far away. So I get closer to my bike, and I had food and snack and drink, and they just piled stuff onto my bike. I don't know, like a thank you, or they thought I was starving and I didn't have any food. I don't know, but it was just the most memorable experience I had on my trip. And that's what the lasting impression that I have. And the other thing is, you know, I took this journey, that 6-month trip to, you know, to grieve over my husband, and I thought I would share my stories and all that. But what I found was that all the people I talked to, you know, they lost loved ones too. And I was their sounding board for them to share their story with me, and that they felt safe to share that story with me. And it was that bike, the motorcycle, that opened that door to have that conversation. So to me, it's all about the journey and the people I meet. That's cool. I got to see, you know, a gas station that had an airplane on top of the gas station. I saw, you know, I can't tell you how many Uniloyal gal and all of those statues out there. But it was the people I met talking about it.
Well, the TW is a really unique looking bike with the big wheels, and you know, I've never met someone who actually doesn't like that bike.
You know, and all the people I met, and they, oh, I had that bike as a kid. I wish I never got rid of it. I remember learning about how to ride on that motorcycle, and I kept mine because it's just so much fun to ride. You know, we'll just go out and we'll pet. We'll just have a goof off day. We'll, or meet a group of other TW riders. It's a cult. If you look at the website for the TW and the things that, that modification they've done to those bikes, they put those ATV tires on them, they extend the swing arm. One guy I knew, he built a trailer for his. When he goes elk hunting, he has a way to bring the elk back. It's amazing.
Wow. The 350 has the same kind of cult following. The groups that I'm in, they're usually old guys. But there, a lot of them have had at least two or three throughout their life. They say they'll buy one. They think they get bored with it. They sell it, and they really miss it because the 350 is just it's a unique bike that everyone who's ever been on it loves them.
Mm-hmm. Same thing. And that's why we have three in our garage. In case we have friends come over, we'll have an extra bike. Yep. One for me, one for my husband. I'm remarried, and one for my husband, and a spare bike for our guests.
That is so awesome. I want to come ride a TW. I've never gotten to ride one.
When you come to Alabama, we'll meet up somewhere because I know you have allergies, so you can't come to our little mini farm, but we'll definitely meet up somewhere and you can ride a TW.
Oh, I can come to your farm. I have allergies, but I take medication, so I'm all right.
Okay.
And I do love animals. What kind of animals do you have on your farm?
So we still have our search and rescue horses. That's what we did our search and rescue on. We're mounted. And then we have lots of chicken. And we don't have our cow anymore. He's now in our freezer, 400 pounds worth of meat that we're trying to eat. And then we have a dog and a cat.
Oh, okay. A little mini farm.
Yep, little mini farm, just enough to keep us busy.
So which bike do you go out on more, the CB or the TW?
Since we moved to Alabama, it's a CB500. When we lived in California, we lived in the desert, and we were on that TW all the time because there was just so much area to explore on the TW in the desert. So now here, it's just been the love of the CB500 because we checked those farm roads, the little forest road, and fire road just to check out places.
Oh, very nice. What's the top speed on the TW?
Well, depending who you talk to. The average is 55, 60 miles an hour on the TW. You can change out the sprocket, make it go a little bit faster. So going downhill, I can get it up to 70.
That's awesome. That's definitely taking it slow.
Yep. I'm all about slow. Even on this 500, I'm not about doing 80 miles an hour. I'll still take the back road to go, 45, 55 miles an hour just to enjoy life. And I have a friend who wrote a great article, and it wasn't about, he rides motorcycle too, but it wasn't all about motorcycles. But he was talking about quilting, riding a lawnmower, riding a motorcycle. They all do the same thing. It's your meditation. When you get on that bike, and you let the world melt away. You're just listening to the sound of the wind. For those who can hear the motor, for me, it's all about the feel. Because I don't know if you noticed, but I'm hearing impaired. And so I can't hear when I have to shift gears or stuff. But I can feel it. So I've learned to train myself how to feel all that. But that's, you get into a zone. And that's what meditation is all about. It's getting into that zone, whether you're riding a motorcycle, mowing the lawn, or if you... ladies out there who love to knit. It's all about getting into that zone and finding that center within yourself.
It's funny you say mow in the yard. One of my bike's broken down and I'm at my friend's place, I'll hop on their zero-turn mower and go mow their 3 acres because it's the closest thing I can get to riding at the time.
Exactly.
So do you have any advice for anyone who wants to go from a big bike to a little bike or do a big adventure on a little bike?
So if you shifting gear from a big bike to a little bike, it's hard because people are used to the big bike and can get up and go. But the reality is that when you're traveling, in the United States or locally, you don't need to pack everything you need to pack when you want to go for a long trip. I'll tell you, when I took my, I planned for my 6 month trip and on that little bike, I have shipped like 3 times the fastest to my friends because I sold everything. I didn't have a house. I had a 10x10 storage for all my stuff, but I shipped stuff back to my friends. And, I overpacked because I have forgotten you can get anything you need here in the United States. Now, the story may be a little bit different in, you know, Mexico or South America or Europe, but you don't need everything you think you need when you're traveling. And I think the biggest headache when you're traveling is all the electronics. That's what it was for me. Everything else I had with the minimalist, I had, you know, just my one pot for cooking everything in. I didn't need all the pot in the pan because you can pretty much cook in that one little pot. But my biggest headache with electronic, you know, charging this, charging that. And why can't we have the same type of charger for every different device? Does one have to be, you know, the Apple way or the C or the other format or whatever? But just think back what you really need to have on your bike. But there's no wrong or right way of packing because you're going to have, if you talk to 10 different travelers, I'm sure you be, and versus what I travel, we have different things in our pack, right?
Right.
So what's important to you? You know, I watched the blog, I watched the post, and people say, oh, no, you need this. Oh, no, you need that. And, you know, if you can afford it, go ahead and get it. If you can't afford it, there are cheaper alternatives. One of the things that I think my most favorite thing of all when I was traveling, I had a friend in the construction industry, and you guys know what a tieback is, right? It's that material they put between the walls and the outside material they put up on a house or a building.
Mm-hmm.
If you read backpacker blogs, they use that to make all kind of stuff. So you can make a bowl out of that tieback. You can make a wallet. I use it as my tarp or my cover shelter. And it's compact and small, and it works for everything. I put it under my tent. It was easy to put it on my bike because, like, I can fold it up really small. I mean, you just can't go and buy it. But if you know somebody in the construction industry and they have pieces left over, I would snag that up. That's probably my most favorite little invention. The top one. I have two favorite inventions. The tieback thing for the tarp or shelters or whatever you need it for. And the other one, as you know, so your 350 doesn't have a center stand, right?
Oh, no, I have to use a trail stand.
Okay. But when you're traveling, do you have a trail stand to you can take with you?
Yeah. Yeah, I bought one. It's called the Trail Stand 3, TS3. It's just a guy who figured out a thing. It's real small and compact, a tube inside of a tube with a foot and a hook to set your bike on. It's tiny and it works great.
Oh, cool. I was going to check that out. You know what I did for my little 200? I took two crutches and took the rubber end on that, you know, where all the little doodads that you make it longer or taller or shorter on the crutches. And I took two of them out, put them together and put the rubber piece on both sides. And I used that as my little, as you call, trail stand to prop my bike up so I can work on my chain or get the back tire off the ground. And it's the little rod to use, and I can just put it in my back panniers to what I need for my bike. So those are my two inventions I made on my trip.
Nice. Yeah, I've heard the end of crutches being the cheap and easy thing to make for a trail stand. They're a little bigger than buying the expensive one I have, but if you're on a budget, it works.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, let's see. Anything else you'd like to discuss before we end the show?
You know, the only thing I always preach to everybody is life is too short. Take that journey now. Don't wait till the opportune time to go because you'll just never know when that time is going to be.
Oh, I agree. I mean, you're never going to feel ready. You're never going to think you have enough to go. So take what you got and figure it out from there. It's the only option if you want to go out and do it.
Exactly. Leap of faith.
I agree. It's been really great chatting with you, Gina. We'll have to meet up again sometime. You're not very far from where I hang out in Tennessee, so.
Exactly. I would love that. Or we can just meet up somewhere. When your bike is put back together, we can meet up and have lunch.
That'd be awesome. Well, thank you for chatting with me.
Thank you so much.
Go ahead.
I was going to say thank you for inviting me on the show. It was lovely chatting with you and catching up with you again. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it was awesome. And I really hope, I love little bikes. It's something that I'm super passionate about. And I really hope people will listen to the show and take the little bike adventure. I plan to actually take my 1971 Honda Z50 across country one of these days. I'm going to do the TAT on it.
Oh, that'd be awesome. I would love to do the 200 on the TAT. So that's one of my bucket lists.
See, everyone's like, why don't you take the 350? And I was like, everyone's taking a 350 on the TAT. I want to take the 50 on the TAT. That way I have to push it up the hill.
There you go. Yep.
Well, thank you so much, and I hope you have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.